the celebrations. We want to thank God for the fathers that He has given to us. We are blessed as Saint Sabina to have a brother coming to speak to us on this Father's Day. This father is a father to two boys, a husband to one lady. Amen. That's a blessing. A husband to one lady, a father to two sons, a son to one lady, and a firefighter for 34 years. He has been married for 24 years. He loves saving lives. Brother Andrea, we thank you for allowing us to listen to you this morning as you speak to all the fathers. Sometimes fathers are the unsung heroes, but today you wanna just encourage the fathers on this Father's Day. Let's welcome Mr. Andrea Rayford as he comes to address.
Morning, Saint Sabina. Wow. I got a phone call. Well, my wife got a phone call, a message from Minister Lymore. And she told me that Minister Lymore wanted to talk to me. So, thumbs up. And found out she wanted me to speak today on Father's Day. I said, wow. Guess I can do that. What shall I say? And I struggled with it for a minute, and then I realized you can speak freely and easily about things that you're passionate about. And that's what I plan to do today. So I have some notes here. I started out writing a speech, and I realized that would be sort of like first day of summer school with no heat in the school. I mean, no air conditioning in the school. That would be, oh Lord. And I knew it was going to be hot today. So I decided not to speak, but just to have some points to talk about. So first off, it's Father's Day. This is the one day of the year. And before I get started, I'd like to thank Father Tulani and Minister Lymore, and of course, Father Mike, for allowing me to be here today to speak. And I also like to say, I don't know if anyone here was at the Peace March, Peace Rally. I was at UR. Give yourselves a round of applause. And for those who couldn't be there like myself, I was at work that day, but I did see pieces of it online and on television. That's a wonderful thing. And it's something that didn't just start. This has been going on for a long time here at St. Sabina. Father Michael Flager has been marching, standing up, and swimming upstream for many years for our community and for the world. And he was doing it when it wasn't popular. Now, you know, a lot of people march now. A lot of people stand up. But he was doing it when people were criticizing him, ridiculing him, saying, what business does he have to be doing what he's doing? Who does he think he is? You know, stores selling paraphernalia to our children, selling alcohol. He stood up for that. He did what was right. Anytime I talk to somebody, I try to wonder, what is it that you don't like about Father Flager? Crickets. You know, because what can they say? He stands up for what's right. So I want to make sure that I got that out. So today is Father's Day, as I said before. This is the first day, or the only day, that us dads kind of catch up just a little bit to the mothers. And I said catch up, so you know what position we're in, right? Okay. But so we get a little bit today. Some of the things that I was thinking about was the fact that, you know, on Mother's Day, if you don't have a reservation about a month in advance, you're going to be eating at home. get someplace to go right now. That'll be no problem. That'll be, oh, sure. Come on in. We got a place. Buffet, $59.99. Come on in. So phone calls almost shuts down the network on Mother's Day. You can't. It's hard. Sometimes your call might get dropped. Father's Day. Game with those crickets. But that's okay. We're built for it. And the mothers, you know what? They get that recognition and they deserve it. And there's nothing wrong with that. So, my introduction here, I want to say, tell you a little bit about myself. I'm father. As I said, my wife Gina here, we've been married for, it'll be 24 years next month, July 16th. She's a very loving wife, patient wife, and she needs patience with me because as we got here today, we were a little bit late getting to church, which we said we weren't going to do today. Actually, I couldn't find this paper. I had just finished putting some notations on it, and it was time to walk out the door. I literally got in the car and ran back in the house. I said, I don't have a speech. Ran back in the house. I'm looking for it. I mean, this is literally 25 minutes ago. I go, finally, I'm not blaming you, Alex. My son had taken it and put it in a bag with a card, Father's Day card. He was instructed to do. He didn't realize it was a speech. So it was actually in the car all along. I said that to say my wife's patience also has been tested because when we met on a blind date, and on that blind date, I was 3 hours late. Full disclosure, I'll let it know right from the beginning. Reason for that, and I'll be brief, was I was at a funeral, and it was an evening funeral, and the chairs were all the way down the row, it was for a family member, and I was sat, probably because I got there late, I was sat right in front of the coffin, right, the chairs were going along the sides of the pew. So even if I wanted to leave early, I couldn't. So this was back in the olden days. Back in 1989. There was no cell phones, so best you could do was a payphone and a couple coins. So I couldn't contact her to let her know what was going on. So I got there, I was like, I think there might have been 2 funerals that day, but everything worked out, as you can see, 24 years later. So it's that's a blessing. So as I said, if Father Tamani alluded to this one thing, this is 24 years married, and I have 29 years on the fire department. It's a great job. I love it. But that's one thing I've got to get on myself. Family. My mother's here today. Dorothy Rayford, she's here today. My son Alex is here, of course. And I have a couple of friends in the audience too. Dina Moorhead, Ryan Brown, these 2 boys, you guys. Thanks for coming. As I was saying, my family, love my family dearly. I have another son. He's not here today. Andre Jr., he's the oldest, he's 20. I grew up on the west side of Chicago, a little place called K-Town. Some people might be familiar. It's West Side, all right. 19th of Comiskey. 19th of Comiskey. Had a great childhood, I'll tell you. A lot of things you hear about the West Side, you say, you know, negative things. And you know what? A lot of it's true. But as I grew up, born in 64, it was a wonderful place to grow up. I can't, maybe some other people have different impressions, but mine was great. And it was just a time when kids could be kids. Things were a lot mellower, a lot easier. I went to school, Our Lady of Lourdes, Catholic school in 14th and Keeler. I was an altar boy. That was good. Got to be here with my Father Tulani, Father Mike. Served in the morning. One little quick story. One Saturday, they called me to come to church, and I decided, Saturday. What do you want? What's going on? Oh, there's a wedding. Nah, I don't want to do that. I'm riding my bike. Ma, I don't want to go to church today. I don't want to do the wedding. Okay? They called another altar boy, my buddy Pinto. That's a good name. pencil layout. I found out pencil got $50 for serving at that wedding. I had never seen $50 at one time in my life. I'm talking to you about it today because it still haunts me. It's like, what? You didn't tell me about the money. But that's maybe the other. But yeah, as I said, grew up Westside Chicago. Great upbringing. Loved it. So I'm going to fast forward to what we're going to talk about, which is fatherhood, my father's thing. Now, for me and my wife, we were two people who did not have any experience with children when we were coming up. So we had nothing. The closest it came to that was we had a friend who wanted us to babysit their two boys. Fine. How hard could it be? We're double income, no kids. We'll babysit. These boys were like two and three, two and four, something like that. And it was so unnerving to the point where we were like, okay, you shower, I'll watch them. And then you come out of the shower, I'll go to the shower, and then you watch them. And it was like, we just weren't used to it. Scared us to death. It was like, this is tough. We had our own kids. We were like, wait a minute, this ain't so bad. Got home with our son. Couldn't believe they actually gave us a child to take home. We literally looked at him on the bed and said, they gave us a thing. They actually, what did we do? We took a picture of him just laying in the bed in his car seat. It's real easy, as you all know. Early years, early months, they don't do anything. So it's not hard. It gets tough. A little guy, my wife, I'll just tell this real quick story. Jada was having a rough day. I was at work. She said, she was crying and laughing at the same time. Austin Powers was the movie she had to watch to get through it. It was one of those baby days where things just weren't going right. And she literally said she was crying and laughing at the same time, but she made it through. I said, okay, you did your part. It's time for me to do mine. Fast forward. I'm at home. Got my son with me. There's no such thing as babysitting your own kids. I'm at home with my son. I'm at home with him. And we're going through the diaper changing thing. And I'm not going to say which side it was right now. Okay. We're going through the diaper changing thing. And it's like, Alex, you're at this age now where you should be taking care of this business yourself. We've read the potty book. We've done all the little toys, the little contraptions that make you go. You need to step up, man. Okay, Dad. You tell me. Okay, so you have a potty. Sure enough, get that little pull up. There it is. Yeah, we gotta do something. So I decided, I thought, what any self-respecting man do in a situation like that, I called my wife. I called her at work and I told her, Jim, we got a problem here. And I think I'm gonna fix it. And my remedy was, I took his onesie, I took off the pull-up, and I told the man, hey, this is it. If you have any self-respect, I know. And I got the onesie. So he's walking around commanding now. I said, if you have any self-respect, you will not just do your thing on the floor. And I was counting on that. I didn't want him to see the sweat popping out my forehead because I wasn't sure. And sure enough, that did it. So that got me through. So that was my time. So I consider it a draw. But the last thing I'm going to talk about with my son. Other thing is, little side note, he was at home, we were at home the other day, and he said, Daddy, I'm going to be a fire. I'm going to be a fire. I'm thinking, I'm going to be a firefighter, I'm a firefighter, okay. And he was pushing his little fire engine, so you could sit on it and ride it, or you could push it. And he said, I'm going to be a fire. I'm like, okay, that's cute, real cute. He goes around the corner, and he stands up on the fire truck, on the seat, and he pushes the button on the alarm. And he pushed the fire button. He had one blue one for police, red for fire. He pushed the red one. So I'm at home, and I'm going, why is this sound happening? It was like a boo, boo, boo. And all of a sudden, I realized what he had done. Next thing I know, I got the fire department in my house, and I'm sitting there going, what is going on? I couldn't believe it. I'm like, first of all, I didn't even know he knew what that was. Just goes to show you. You never know. All right, so as I said, about fatherhood and issues that we have going on t- today. I want to speak about, and I'm going to use situations in my life to explain what my main point is. Angel 16 is a place that I went to when I came out of fire academy. At that time, Angel 16 is located in Robert Taylor Homes. What formerly was Robert Taylor Homes, 40th and Dearborn. The now superintendent, or rather commissioner of the fire department, Jose Santiago, was my group leader. And when we got our assignments, he leaned over to me and he said, you're going to the busiest engine in the city. I said, great, I was 24 years old, I'm ready for it. And when I went there, I learned a lot about myself. I learned a lot about other people. And in the housing development, there was a lot of what I thought joy and pain. There were beautiful things going on, and there were some terrible things going on. There were things that I saw in there that I couldn't believe I was seeing. And then, even more on top of that, I couldn't believe that nobody heard about it. The next day, it wasn't in the newspaper. It wasn't on television. The best you could expect that it would be in the Chicago Defender. It amazed me that that much crime, pain, and misery was going on and nobody noticed. I learned a lot of lessons from the children there. I had a young man who told me that he was sitting in the back of the firehouse. And that's another thing the kids like to do. They like to come to the firehouse and hang out in the summertime. And the way Angel 16 was situated, it was right smack dab in Robert Taylor, in that particular area. And I'll give you a little situation, give you a visualization. If the firehouse is right here, that wall and that wall are the buildings. And we're facing that way, State Street is behind us. So what happens is, we call ourselves Little House on the Prairie, Little Firehouse on the Prairie, because we were in the community. And some firehouses that are in communities, in ethnic communities, African-American communities, in the hood, they take a kind of closed-door approach. Sometimes it's warranted, other times it's not. It'll be a situation where, hey, close the doors, guys. There's a lot of stuff going on out there. We don't want it to come in here. I can understand that. But it wasn't like that in Angel 16. The way it was, we had an officer there. I'm going to drop a few names that you probably don't know, but then again, you just like. Lieutenant there at the time was Art Lewis. And his philosophy was, hey, man, we got to have doors open. This is the community. We serve the community. I'm with it. Got no problem with that. They had the doors open. People became like a neighborhood firehouse. People would come there to laugh, joke, cry. Something happened. Got shot, stabbed, robbed. We were first place. It was almost like a clinic. You were sick, something's going on, they would come there before they would go to the hospital and call 911. And it was a great place to work and to be. And just by us doing our little bit, in this case, it was men. It was all men. There were no women working there at the time. We did our part, and unknowingly, we were fathers to these children in the neighborhood. And the person I mentioned, Art Lewis, he had a sister that was a Chicago public school teacher. And they had a program in her school called the Perfect Tennis Program. He said, hey, we're going to do it here. We can do that here. We can do that here. We have a school right down the street, Hardigan School. He said, I'm going to talk to the principal. The principal's name was Betty Greer. He said, I'm going to talk to Ms. Greer and see if she can, we can get this thing started. Maybe we can do something. Now, at the time, I was a house treasurer at the firehouse. So I said, okay, I got the purse strings. We had another firefighter there, Kirk Flowers, strongest man I know. Kirk Flowers, this is an interesting guy. Two quick things about Kirk. Number one, me and him lived a block apart from each other. Never met. We didn't meet until we got in the fire department. There's a good reason why we never met. Because Kirk was 10 years older than me. So when he was 20 years old, I was 10. So we should have been friends anyway. But we met on the fire department, and Kirk became... He was this guy who never drove a car. He rode a bike everywhere. He had a son who lived in Elmhurst. He would get on his bike in Chicago. He lived on 95th Street. And he would ride his bike to Elmhurst. Couldn't believe it. And I always joke with him. I said, man, you ride that bike and you never lose a pound. I'm like, how do you do that? How does that happen? But he had this thing about bikes. He loved bikes. So Kirk decided, hey, man, we'll start a bike program. That'll be the incentive to keep these kids in school with this perfect attendance. Now, initially, we gave out Walkmans. We said, okay, we'll give you a Walkman, give you that, and you can. That's the incentive. It went from that to the bikes. And when we did the bikes, the kids lit up. We had an assembly at the school. Kids went crazy. They loved it. They were like, oh, yeah, I'm coming to school every day. It was a successful program. And it got so successful, it got picked up by Fox News, and then Reader's Digest, and then Time Magazine, and then Oprah. And we did a segment on Oprah, like right at the end of one of our shows, and then the floodgates opened. We started getting bikes from everywhere, all over the country. One even came from Germany. It was amazing. So the program, the way it worked was, if you go to school every day, you get a bike. And then we kind of brought it down a little bit. We didn't have to have perfect attendance, but it had to be really good. And at the end of the year, these kids were getting bikes and they were loving it. That program was basically the first thing that we could say went viral. And it was a wonderful thing. But at the same time, I see these children and they have serious problems in their homes. There are things going on in this building, in these buildings that you don't see. But the kids see everything. They see every crime that's committed. People that commit crimes, they don't hide them from little kids. So that's why a lot of our children are so damaged in some cases because they've seen too much. One little guy, he told me a little quick story. We were sitting in the back of the firehouse and he says to me, hey man, he said, I like that car. Car went past. I said, you do? I said, okay, you know what it takes to get a car like that? And I was prepared with my speech about, hey, okay, first you got to do well in school. And then you do well in school, you graduate, you go to college, you go to high school, you go to college, you get a good job. And he totally shut me down. I said, well, because I asked him, I said, well, you got to get work first to get a car like that. He said, money. I said, right. I said, how do you get money? He said, it comes in the mailbox. I said, wow, okay. I got to backtrack because we're not on the same page. And I said, yeah, it's like, you know, that's right. Okay, that's right. And there's nothing wrong with public assistance. But that's the only story he knew. That's the only avenue he knew. He didn't know the other story that, yeah, you can do that. And then when you do that, you can do this, and you can do the other, and you can do the other thing. So it was kind of a one-track mind, and I wanted to change that. I wanted to turn that thing around. So, as I said, the bike program was a success. That young man, I hope, is doing better. I meet a lot of people from that neighborhood that I've seen, that I haven't seen in years. I was coming here one day, and I was in my uniform, my fire department uniform. I was coming here for a funeral. It was Officer Bailey, if anybody remembers, a police officer. He was the detail for the mayor at the time, and he got murdered in front of his house. Someone tried to steal his car. And they had a funeral here, and I was actually on Racine trying to find out which way to go. The police had the streets blocked off, and I'm sitting right there across from BJ's Market. The car's next to me, and the guy in the car looks over, and he goes, hey, I know you. And I go, really? He was like, you used to work over there in the 40s. You used to fix my bike. It's a grown man. He's got his kids in the car. And I'm looking, and I'm going, I didn't remember him. I asked him his name. And he was trying to refresh me. This is all a period of time where he was sitting at a light. But that's happened to me several times, where I've seen people from back then. It happened at the Jewel, the grocery store. A woman just walked up to me. I know you. And I go, wow. So it just goes to show you impact people's lives in ways that you never know. And that's what we need to do. I have here, okay, so. As I said, I think everyone knows. I got a couple of things I want to say. Proverbs 22:6 says, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he or she will not depart from it. I think that's important for all of us, but especially fathers today. Deuteronomy 6, chapter 6, verse 69 says, and I'm paraphrasing here, love the Lord, impress this on your children. When you sit at home, when you walk the road, when you lay down, when you get up. And that's what us as fathers, I know we need to do. We have a lot of things that we have to share, but we tend not to because we don't talk about that. I was thinking about today when Tad on my show, on my quote, says, hello, my name is. So I think, you know, everybody, we know everybody. I see a lot of faces here that I see every Sunday, but I don't know everybody by name. I'm going to try to work on that. I'm not going to do it. What I want to call this conversation I'm having today is a call to arms. Now, the definition of a call to arms is to prepare for a confrontation, to defend against a takeover. And that's how I see it. Our children are being assaulted on all sides. We have, and I know this might hurt some people's feelings, but we got Instagram, we got Facebook, we got Snapchat. We have all the social media, and it's impacting our kids in a negative way every day. They talk about detoxing on social media, and if you think about it, they're saying it's toxic, and you need to detox. We have things going on with children being abused, bullied, murdered over texting. That's insane. We need to come to grips with that. So the best thing we can do to thwart this is to try to change the current, try to turn it around. I ask the question, where's Big Mama? Where's Papa? Where's Medea? All these people from back in the day who, as a youngster, you would never, ever, ever do anything disrespectful in front of these people. Ever. You could be right in the middle of it, and you would snap to attention and go, you know, whatever you had, it would go behind your back, and, oh, I'm sorry. There would be no backtalk. Not anymore. We have people, not to bring down the road, but, I mean, we had an 81-year-old woman murdered a few days ago. That's insane. And every time something bad happens, I look at it and I wonder, am I the only one seeing this? I look around, like, and I'll be like, did anybody else see what I just saw? We have to change it. And speaking to the men in the room today, I got a way to do it. And what I'm saying here is, first off, I want to say that the men in this room today are strong men of faith. And we are men who make it look easy when we do what we do every day. And I think sometimes that might be the deceptive thing that makes younger people think that, hey, what's the big deal? What's the big deal with real fatherhood? Well, what they don't see is we're kind of like ducks flying along the surface, but under the water, our feet are moving real fast. And we need to let them know, let young people know, that this doesn't happen by accident. The fact that everything that happens in this church, somebody had to make it happen. Mr. Glover is here taking pictures all the time. God bless you. he's a man of God who does something for people, doesn't ask for anything in return. And I'm saying that to Mr. Glover, but I'm speaking to everyone here. So what I think we're doing, and I'm not criticizing, I have to say that, but I think we're sitting on our talents a little bit. And by that I mean this. When we have a problem such as we have today, we need to do more than we're doing. And this is not really, hey, I'm not saying it's right. If you got something better, I'm with it. Don't sit on your talents. My question is, how many times, and this is what I wrote down, I want to say it right, how many times have I found out the most interesting thing about a person at their funeral? I mean, you read the obituary and you go, wow, I didn't know that. Really? Buddy of mine's mother passed and had a funeral not too far from my house. And I thought about that she was a belly dancer. Now, not professionally, but she did belly dancing. My wife took a belly dancing class. So when I saw that, I was like, wow, I didn't know that. And it would have been interesting to know that prior to passing. So as I say, and I'm speaking specifically to the men, but this goes out to everybody, we're sitting on our talents. So if we have things we do, it's time for us to brag. It's time for us to brag. I know that's not popular, but we should brag. We should say, you know what? This is what I've done. These are the experiences I've had. Hey, little fella, come here, let me show you something. We got a fisherman, we got maybe a guy my age or older, kid, he showed you how to tie a fishing line.
What? Really?
Yeah, come here. Get the fishing pole out. Show him how to do it. They think that us older people, I'm 50. I stopped counting after a while. But they think that we were born, with a bad knee, bad hip. They don't know us, but they don't know us back in the day. They haven't seen the pictures. There's no video, but they haven't seen the pictures. My wife and I have read a picture. My child now. We were something. We still are something. You're right. We still are something. So it's like, to make it relevant, everybody's done something. We all have accomplishments. We've all done things. We've all experienced things. So it's like, we need to share this with these youngsters and let them know that, hey, I'm not just grandma. Let me tell you what grandma's done. In the note of bragging, I'm going to brag a little bit real quick. I'll tell you about a few people in the room. First of all, my mother. Watch this script first, my wife. Those at the wedding. Okay, my wife is mother of two. She's a bank vice president at 28 years in banking. She's got an MBA. She puts up with me and the boys. She's a great woman. Those things need to be known. She needs to say that to some other young person who might be not understanding what their path is. Open up. Tell them what you do. My mother, she was a track star back in the day, and she told me about it. She said, Tuskegee Women's Relay. Really? Yeah. I said, you got two knees. Yeah, she does. But she used to run track, and she ran so well, she actually kind of worked a tryout. She didn't go to the Olympics, but she was good enough to get a tryout. One time, I'll tell you this real quick story. I was younger, much younger. My mother and a woman were having a discussion about who was the fastest. My mother, Jeretha, Aaron Jeretha, I said this back in the day, they're going to race. And I said, distinctly, I'm going to take her shoes off. So I made shoes on his barefoot on concrete. Down from Lisbon. But they had a race, and they took off down the block. And my mother won. But she fell at the end of the race, and she went literally head over heels. And she got scratched up and scraped up, but of course she came walking back. So I told you I could beat you. I'm like, wow. Okay. Couldn't imagine her doing that today, but I wouldn't. I'm not going to doubt it. As I said, we have people that have great talents and things, and I think you need to let young people know. If you're a musician, tell them your name. Like a time to show you something. Make it relevant so when they see us, they look at old pictures of us. It's not just they're looking, they're thinking of us as, oh, that's just old so and so. No, that's Big Mama. That's Medina. That's Papa. That's the guy who did it. Did you know he was in the war? Did you know he got a medal for this and that? Did you know? It's like, yeah, that makes it relevant. That makes us a situation where that kid is not going to put his hands on that person. I worry about what the world is going to be like when I become a senior. It's like, am I going to have to live in a cage because I have to be afraid of everyone around me? The way it's going, it seems like that might be the situation. And that goes for cooking too. Ladies, you got recipes. Hey, let's not take them to the grave. Pass it on. Everybody, and I'm saying ladies, that's chauvinistic. And men too, because I do some good ribs. As my wife will attest to. As I said, we have things to give, we have things to share, and we should make sure that when we have a situation where we can touch a young person spiritually and help them get through this crazy world, we should do it. We should absolutely do it. There's no reason not to. We have too many opportunities to. And in closing, before I go, I want to say this because I would be remiss if I didn't. Being a firefighter, I come into so many situations where I see terrible things and I want to stop. Real quick, two Sundays ago, I was standing holding a 2-year-old in a car seat while a 2-year-old mother was cradling a 2-month-old's father who had been shot on 77th and Kingston, right on the corner. I looked at this little child when I was home, and I'm like, wondering what kind of life are you going to have? As I look at this baby, this infant, this beautiful, resilient infant you've ever seen, it's like, what is your future? You know, it's like, at 2 months old, you're in the midst of a shooting. What is your life going to be like? And this kid has a bright future, as bright as any kid's. But what's it going to be like? We're not praying on that. The other thing, smoke detectors, CO detectors, and gas detectors. So often I hear at work, and I see it, you see it on the news, they'll say, there was a fire today. X number of people were killed. No working smoke detectors. That should never, ever, ever, ever happen. We have life insurance. Those things are life assurance. They will assure that you will say you will survive a fire. Fires happen. Doesn't have to be your fault. You can live in an apartment building and fire can break out below you, above you. Doesn't have to be your fault, but it will affect you. So, everybody's got to make a promise. Like I do when I do my fire prevention for school. And I tell them, little kids, I make them little fire deputies, deputy fire commissioners. I tell them, the fire marshals, I tell them, tell your parents that you need a working smoke detector in your home. Now, here's a thing, real quick. Anytime a smoke detector makes a sound, it's trying to tell you something. If it beeps a little bit, like once every 30 seconds, it's telling you the battery's low. If it beeps really loud for a long time, it's telling you there's smoke in the house. Either way, that's an emergency. Because if the battery's low and that beep you hear, people get immune to it, and they just hear it, but they don't hear it. Eventually, that beep is going to stop. When it stops, that's just a piece of plastic on the wall. It can't do anything for you. When we lay down and go to sleep, we're unconscious. So when that happens, anything happens after that, we may or may not wake up. The CO detector, carbon monoxide. You could have a bad stove, bad water heater. The guy down below, you could have a bad stove or water heater. If that comes into your home every year, you know, you hear about it in the news. Carbon monoxide poisoning. Family died. We had a family that went to a rental house on vacation, and there was a problem with some piping in the house, and they wanted the whole family to die. So make sure you do that. There's one other device I want to tell you about, and that's a gas detector. The gas detector, they sell it at Lowe's, Home Depot. I don't get any money for it, trust me. But what it does is it's a combination of carbon monoxide and natural gas. These things, now think about it. We pay money to have gas pumped into our house, but it's legal to us. There's a gas leak. If you smell it, yeah, but what if you're asleep? What if it goes up? Every year you hear about at least one house explosion. So they have a device that actually addresses these issues. And I don't want to hear about another person being injured or killed because they didn't spend a few dollars on a device that could save them and their entire family. So, and that's that. Say something about a family. I'd like to say thank you for letting me stand here and talk to you for these minutes. Really think about what I said, because I'm going to try to do it too as far as reaching our young people. Father's Day, I think, is a good step-off point to do that. We need to reach them because they're going in a wrong direction. This world is, every time I look at the news, I just shake my head. I know other people do too. And it's like, we don't know what to do. But the good news is, God is in control. I'm not going to say I put it in God's hands because it was already there anyway. So we were just messing it up. So what we're going to do as a family is we're going to reach out to our young people, just like they reached out after that rally. We're going to reach back. We're going to let them know who we are, what we stand for, and what we won't stand for, and we're going to love them. There's some kids out here who are prodigal sons and daughters who maybe stepped away. They're eventually going to come back. As in, with the prodigal son, we welcome them back. And that's my time.